Sourcing for innovation, making sense of the rapidly changing worlds of artificial intelligence, workforce development, and digital transformation.
Sourcing for Innovation, episode 32. My name is Adam Curtis, joined again by Catalyte CEO, Matt Durella. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Adam.
I wanted to get your insights today on this recent survey that came out that highlighted the disconnect between what companies are saying that they're doing for skills-based hiring and what they're actually doing. So just to set this up, this was a Burning Glass Institute, Harvard Business School study titled Skills-Based Hiring, The Long Road from Pronouncements to Practice. The good news is they found out from 2014 to 2023, there was almost a 4x increase in the number of job postings that did not require a degree. So in that respect, it looks like we were moving in the right direction for skills-based hiring. Companies, employers, public and private sector were dropping the degree requirement. When you looked a little bit deeper into what those numbers are, just because they were dropping the degree requirement from positions doesn't mean they were hiring people without degrees. In fact, less than 1 in 700 new hires, so 0.14% of new hires for these job postings that no longer require a degree were people hired without a degree. So the difference is ginormous between, yes, we're dropping degree requirements, but we're still not hiring people without degrees. So with that setup, I'll ask you the very basic overview question here is like, why is this disconnect happening? Why is there a disconnect between what we're hearing companies say, what we're seeing companies do in dropping the degree requirements, and then what they're not doing, which is hiring people without degrees still?
Well, I think we're seeing how entrenched some of the hiring practices are in the U.S. in particular, that have been, you know, sort of the same old for decades and decades. So at the top of an organization, they've reviewed the data. They've maybe done some work to understand, like, what do people really need in terms of skills and aptitudes and attitudes to be a high performer in a role. They've got a sense that a college degree is not a requirement or a good predictor of success. And so they've said, okay, let's remove that and broaden the pools. Makes total sense. But in practice, you know, the millions of people that are actually dealing with resumes coming in, I have a manager who's got a lot of pressure on them to get someone into the organization as soon as possible. They're using metrics like, you know, time to fill. These sort of processes that have been in place are need to be addressed in order for us to actually see the benefits of, you know, dropping requirements and opening up to a more skill-based approach. To be successful. And if you don't put in that infrastructure, if you don't have complete buy-in from the top to the bottom, you're going to see what we're seeing now, which is it's a start. It looks good, you know, to announce at a, you know, in a press release or to the board meeting. But the actual practice of truly, you know, looking at people based on what is their ability to do the job as the first thing you ask, as opposed to where do they work or, you know, what university they go to. For that to change, you really need to get the buy-in of the entire organization, you know, really with where the rubber hits the road, which is in the hiring process, which comes down typically to, you know, a talent acquisition manager, a hiring manager who are making a decision. And that's a big question. I think that's sort of the challenge with some of the academic reviews of this is, you know, we're a little bit focused the high level about what we're seeing in terms of, you know, job tightness in the market, you know, these what appear to be sort of great concepts of evolving the way we do this, but really getting practical. And I think for Catalyte and for other organizations, what we really tried to do is to start thinking about what are the tools, the data that we can put in the hands of those people so that they can just make better decisions. I mean, that's what we're getting at here. I think the promise of skill-based hiring is all around making better decisions, getting more high performers into your org. But in the absence of giving people those tools, I think it'd be naive to think that we're going to see a sudden sort of swell of change in how organizations are operating.
That was one of the things that was left out in reading through this survey. There was a quote that stood out that said, like, when a degree is no longer required, it is still a heuristic hiring managers are likely to use when weighing a candidate's strengths and to assess the risks inherent in choosing one candidate over the other. So it almost is like the upper echelon, the people like you, CEOs, CHROs, et cetera, have given a directive to do skills-based hiring, but not given the people who are actually going to carry out that directive the tools to change anything. So if you don't have any new tools to rely on, then you're not going to be actually changing what you do. You're going to fall back on what you have available.
This is an interesting time. I think that the technological shifts that we're seeing with AI and machine learning do present an opportunity, and I think will lead to just about every process in an organization to be challenged. And I think that opens up the chance for our businesses today to actually really rethink and follow through in a way that actually makes skill-based hiring something that's real and not just a headline. For example, you see companies like IBM. I mean, IBM stands out to me as a company that's really done some great work. They've eliminated, you know, probably 50, 60% of the college requirements. They've gotten deep into the actual skills that are necessary for a job. And, you know, the hiring managers are evaluating talent based on skills in a way that is built into their processes. So if a big company like IBM, you know, can go ahead and make those shifts and sort of bring that along and start using, you know, AI and data to inform the likelihood of someone to be successful, I think that sends a good signal that, you know, this is not only likely, it's inevitable. Why? Because in the end of the day, if you really can create a system that does a better job of delivering high performers into your organization, you've got a huge competitive advantage. But the question really becomes like for the non-IBM, for the companies that are mortal, that don't have huge data and AI teams to help them think through this, what do they do? Where do they start? And I think for us, you know, at Catalyte, we think of ourselves as a data and knowledge company, a company that can take data that you have or data that we have and really turn into knowledge that helps you make better decisions. You know, really at that, for example, at the top of the stack, you know, when you're actually putting together the pile of resumes that you're going to look at, you know, how might you evaluate them beyond the 10-second review that starts with a name, then goes to like the most recent experience, and then goes to that sort of singular college experience, you know, that often is has more weight than probably it should relative to the value it is in predicting the success of someone in a role. And instead, start with some data. We tend to, you know, work on different ways to look at different roles that give us insight into the likelihood of someone to be successful in software engineering, for example. And we've got lots of data that helps us do that sort of consistently at a very, very high level. Start with your own data to understand and make a better decision in that sort of first pile. And I think that in itself will take that sort of promise of skills-based hiring and hiring beyond just, you know, a college degree and most recent experience and really actually fulfill it. Start really opening it up to a new, broader population of people. And then, you know, you've already sort of set yourself up for success. You know, the rest of your apparatus as it relates to, you know, interviews and making them very structured and diving into the experience and frankly, the judgment of a hiring manager, which I think there likely is value in most cases, can all kick in. But if you don't set up at the beginning of the process, you know, something that is different, that uses data as opposed to intuition or just a like rote repeat process that's been in place forever, you're going to get more of the same. And I think the companies that choose to embrace this moment, you know, of AI and thinking about how we can, in a thoughtful, you know, fairness aware way, use data to make better decisions at the front of the process are going to yield much better results and be much more competitive.
Yeah, some of the numbers in there, and this was, I think, the authors trying to yell at the companies that have either backslid or not sort of put these into practice. The stats from this are that skills-based hiring goes beyond the corporate value signaling it yields, as you said, tangible, measurable results. From this survey, they found that non-degreed workers have a retention rate over a two-year period of time, which is 20% higher than their degree holder colleagues. And that also, if skills-based hiring practices could be implemented, then we could get another 250,000 jobs, 250,000 people hired into these positions every single year. So you're looking at A, expanding the talent pool, which we talk about all the time with people who are qualified for these positions, and you're going to get them staying with you 20% longer. Like, that has to have such a huge, just economic bottom line benefit for companies, but still, we're not seeing this put into practice. Like, where is that disconnect? If the numbers are there and so concrete, why isn't it happening still?
Well, listen, I'm not here to make excuses. I think people, you're always going to have a distribution of companies and people that some that are willing to push it and be leaders and others that are going to be laggards and followers. And I think you're sort of seeing that right now play out. I don't think it's controversial to say that over the next several years, you're going to see every company move in this direction. Again, getting back to the bottom line, whether it's the Burning Glass Institute's stat of 20% higher retention, which is very consistent with what we see within our own organization, working with some Fortune 500 companies around this work. But I think it's even more than just retention. I think it's about being able to consistently open up like a much broader level of talent, getting more people, in a relatively tight labor market. You want to have much. You don't want talent pools, you want talent oceans to work through. And I think lastly, the reality is that the indicators that we use today aren't very good. You can't imagine 10 seconds with a resume is going to lead to like some magical, insight into whether someone's going to be really successful. And that's just a open secret that this doesn't work. But it doesn't mean it's going to change. It'll take companies one by one, and hiring managers and HR leaders and business leaders, coming together one by one to sort of do make these changes, experiment with it, learn what's working. I think ultimately see the results we're talking about with this most recent report. And that's just going to, we're already seeing it, build momentum, particularly as I think data and machine learning sort of becomes more and more common. If I think about the realities for some organizations, that are might even have the interest in doing this, they probably don't have a data team at the ready to go build and sort of operate this internally. That team is busy with Lord knows how many other projects. So I think that this is where companies that believe there's something here and want to learn and experiment and lead will work with companies like ours. Work with companies that have built an expertise in this area that are very, very focused on both the technology side of it as well as the talent side of it. And we'll lean on our experience and our tools and our data engineering expertise to go ahead and help them find better talents at the top of the stack and even open up talent pools and, skilling pathways that ensure that they always have day one ready talent to step into the most important roles in an organization. So that I think we're just at a relatively early stage of the cycle. I'm quite encouraged, whether it's, IBM I mentioned or, states like Maryland who are leading and many are following in terms of dropping the degree requirement and really starting to take action on that. The promise of looking beyond a college degree in terms of sort of the singular proxy of whether someone gets in the pile or not, which is, I think, very encouraging. And I think the next 12 to 18 months are going to see an acceleration of that kind of change, both because of the tight labor market, but also because, the data opportunity and the tools that are available today are, they're advancing so quickly. The ability for people to make just better decisions in the jobs, like critical roles, like hiring people that are going to make and build your company, it will become a no-brainer and I think very common. But it's not there now, so it's a very interesting time to sort of see the leaders take the mantle and gain that competitive advantage.
Yeah, I mean, despite all the, I don't want to say slant, because I don't think this thing is slanted, but it's the study is making a point that people are saying this, but they're not doing it. But in that data itself, there are, I think, some bright points. There are some like reasons for optimism. The fact that we saw, a 4x increase in the number of job postings without a degree, I think is progress in some capacity. And then even then, like 37% of the firms that they studied for this are making positive strides and actually are now hiring more people as a percentage who do not have a college degree. Like close to 40% is a pretty good number there. So to your point, like what is the silver lining on this, or like what is the opportunity that we see out of a study that says still 60% could be doing more, but 40% are doing a pretty good job?
I am encouraged. I wouldn't be, you know, committing my energy and our company's energy to really solving these issues and taking advantage of the opportunity we see with sort of a better matching of talent to opportunity if we didn't think it was really the right thing to do and something that can make a huge impact in the world. And so, you know, I am encouraged by some of the work that I'm seeing happening with our partners. And but I think in order to really drive change, you're just going to have to see consistent results, and you know, not just the interesting article from Burning Institute, but like hearing from business leaders about why this is the better way. My personal experience, you know, I worked at Twitter before X, and you know, I was the chief customer officer, and my experience with actually looking beyond college degrees led me to the conclusion that I can't believe that every organization isn't doing this. You know, as a business leader, I just saw an incredible expansive amount of talent, a really broader and deeper set of skills, a level of, you know, different backgrounds that added to the culture of our company and our teams. I was very, very pleased with how we were able to advance sort of strategically the skills and sort of aptitudes of different parts of our organization in a way that really sets us up to be successful. And it wouldn't have happened if we sort of went with the same old, same old. So I speak from experience as anyone who might be a business leader out there listening to this, you know, having led an organization and really thinking about talent strategically, not only get the right people in the seat, make sure they're staying longer, but also setting your organization up for the long term and a sustainable advantage. You know, of course you can't do the same thing as everyone else. There's a very small number of companies that sort of have the pull that sort of guarantees them like their pick. Everyone else should be practicing more of a money ball approach, you know, really thinking strategically about how you can get the best talent in the seat and do it sustainably, and probably doing it by using data in a way that other folks, you know, frankly are ignoring. And those that do that, we're going to have a great advantage.
And hearing you talk like this, there was, again, another quote from here: without institutionalizing sincere intentions into tactical processes, whatever gains these employers made were lost once leadership's attention shifted elsewhere. So even if a company is run like somebody like you, or has that similar mindset, who is pushing for this, who sees the advantage of it, just like any other big enterprise level problem, it comes down basically to change management. And if you don't have the technology internally, then vendor management. So maybe trying to think of it and framing it for practitioners a little bit more in that way takes away some of that philosophical burden almost of making such a major change, and breaking it down into more of, hey, just like we'd be switching cloud providers, we're switching the way in which we source talent, and sort of presenting it and eating at it that way could help companies make this, you know, an easier lift for them.
I think the incentives of an organization are ultimately going to be what drives the behaviors. If the incentive is to get someone in as fast as possible into a seat, and you know, you're a talent acquisition, you know, manager who's, you know, being, you know, tracked based on, you know, how long it takes you to fill a role, you're not actually worried about retention. You're not actually worried about whether the person is a high performer that ends up making a huge impact over several years at the organization. You're worried about, is this person good enough to beat the bar and get in the role quickly? And you're rewarded for that if you get it in. And anything beyond that in terms of their actual success in a job, and whether they go 3 months or 10 years, is never reflected in your incentives or your performance review. And I think that sort of stark reality is something that business leaders really need to think about. And if those are the incentives that are in place today, you know, how can you make these statements like, you know, we believe in skill-based hiring, but if you don't change those incentives down at the bottom, you know, where the action's really happening within an organization, you're going to get more of the same. And it's going to be at your own peril. And those that actually think more holistically, and you know, in my mind, the problem we're trying to solve is we're trying to get more high performers into an organization and get them to stay longer. And like, that is the sweet spot. That's where, you know, if any company could wave a magic wand and get, you know, 40% more high performers who stay 20% longer, they would literally be doing, like, you know, jumping jacks and high fives with excitement. But, and that is actually within their, that is not a dream. Like, that is actually something that systematically could be attacked and I think delivered with the right approach, incentives, and partners, with Catalyte being one of them.
Well, hopefully we'll see those statistics reflected in the follow-up study here that Burning Glass and Harvard Business School will do. So Matt Derella, CEO of Catalyte, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Adam.